And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week we have some local news that has national and statewide implications. And I'd like to start with that, because people really have to be reminded time after time that national news has, it appears in your local news. It makes its way felt in your local activities. If the government does something terrible, that means something terrible is happening in your hometown as a result. It doesn't happen in the air. It's not in the American ethos. It's in every village, every town, every city. So here in Scranton, we have a very important congressional election. We had a Democratic seat that went Republican, not overwhelmingly, and it's regarded as a toss-up seat right now. And we've had a very interesting development in that election, right?
Yeah, and there's a bigger issue involved in it with regard to the Democrats, but specifically, the current mayor of Scranton, Paige Cognetti, has announced what was sort of an open secret, that she's going to seek the seat for the 8th Congressional District that was held by Matt Cartwright for 12 years until Rob Bresnahan beat him in the Republican wave last time. And
she's an interesting sort of a Democrat, because she ran against the Democratic Party establishment to become the mayor.
Right. And the old boy network has never forgiven her. They regard her, number one, as an outsider, because she moved to this area from Oregon. Number two, that she's a woman. And there's a certain degree of misogyny there. She won as an independent and then registered as a Democrat because the previous Democratic mayor went to jail.
Which impeded his ability to come to the office.
Yes, yes. And although there was an interim Republican mayor, Wayne Evans, who did a really good job and said he was not going to run for the seat. He was just, he just succeeded to the seat from council. And, you know, she's regarded in some quarters as an attractive candidate, being a woman, and which is the opposite of the misogyny that we see.
And being corrupt.
Yeah, and being honest and not playing into the backroom politics that we often see. They tried to beat her twice, one with the Councilman John Murray, who really talked about her and she, you know, in his campaign. And then and then in the last primary, the Scranton City Democratic Party chairman, Bob Sheridan, ran against her. And he didn't do very well either. So she's been able to beat the party. Problem now is that with her running for Congress at the same time she's running for mayor, there's a lot of talk around town. I know my wife has heard from quarters why should we elect her if she's going to run for mayor or for Congress? She isn't going to be able to do the job as mayor while she's running. And if she wins, she's going to leave after 1 year. So she's got to overcome that mentality. And part of it's going to be how well her opponents are able to do, you know, put that on her. There's a woman on the Republican side who, you know, the Republicans just didn't get that big a vote. And then there's an independent, Gene Barrett, who played it kind of cagey. He realized that he wasn't going to get into a primary fight with her. He's just going to go the independent route, and he's going to play that issue up.
But he's a Democrat, right? He's a
perennial Democrat. Yeah, he was a councilman. He was the head of the sewer authority. businessman. I mean, he's well known among the party people in Scranton. The thing is, he's kind of the old guard. He's in his 70s, and it's a big contrast with her.
She's in her 40s, right?
40, she's in her 40s and vibrant, and
she has two young kids.
Right, right, and that's what surprised me, that she wants to go to Washington with two young kids here. But she comes from, her husband's a prominent family, Italian family, Cognetti's, and we'll have to see what happens. But I did want to pair that up with what's been happening in the county at the same time. We had a vacancy in the county commissioner's position when Matt McGloin suddenly decided that he wanted to go back to football as a coach. And then he resigned, and then he gave up the dream of being a football coach because it was out of town. But that really screwed things up for the majority on the commissioners. And the current county commissioner, the chairman of the commissioners, Bill Gaughan, is another independent type of Democrat. He doesn't kowtow to the county committee at all. So he's in the same relative position as Paige Cognetti, and the county Democratic Party would like to defeat him. And if they can't defeat him, they'd like to neuter him by having someone appointed to that position who's going to pair up with the Republican, Chris Chermak. And it looked like they were going to be able to do that until at the very last minute the state Supreme Court stepped in based on a lawsuit by Bill Gaughan and said, wait, we have to decide which is the best method of replacing Matt McGloin. There's a conflict in state law between the county code and the state law that gives home rule to the individual counties. And so that's got to be decided by the court. And in the meantime...
And what is the conflict?
Well, the conflict is does it get... The county code talks about elections and for the seat, the vacancy, and the home rule charter says the party that the person who resigned or left office belonged to, that party shall present three names to the court, and the court picks one of those names to fill the vacancy. And what Chris Patrick, the county chairman, did is he gave three names, but he only wanted one of them. The other two were either unknown or has-been type of people. They were just there to fill in. And the county court picked the one that he wanted. But she, she's going to be expected to be hostile to Bill Gaughan, the commissioner, because she, she was terminated by the county commissioners. So... But the larger picture is you have this conflict between the old guard and the new guard. The old guard wanting, the city and the county chairman want to do it the old way, where we pick people, and the new guard saying, we just can't keep filling positions by friends and family. Mm-hmm. That we want competent people, and we want more energy in our positions to really do things. So that's what's going to happen. Whether that, when we get to the congressional race, whether that rift is going to affect the people voting Democratic, Democrats coming home, will have to be seen.
Let me, in talking about the congressional race, let me ask you about Bresnahan, the Republican incumbent. Isn't he an unusually weak candidate?
Well, when he got elected, he was a businessman. He was a fresh face, but he had no record to run on. All he could do was either run against Matt Cartwright's record or run on the coattails of Donald Trump. And running on the coattails was enough, because more people came out in that election than had previously. Matt Cartwright got more votes than he'd ever gotten in six congressional races, and it wasn't enough.
So this was really a failure of the Lackawanna County Democratic Party organization.
Well, the party organization in Lackawanna and Luzerne counties particularly. But yeah. Now here's the problem that Bresnahan has. He's got a record.
Right.
And his record is not very popular. There are a couple of things. One, he ran on the fact that the Congress should not be able to trade stocks. And although he's listed, I believe, as a co-sponsor of a bill to that effect, he's continued to trade stocks at a level or a rate that exceeds almost everybody else in Congress. And he's made a lot of money. And he's come out with a really dumb statement saying, well, if I didn't do this, what am I supposed to do? Go broke. Now, he's reported to be worth $40 or $45 million. And, of course, the answer to that is, no, you don't have to go broke. You just leave Congress and play the stock market where right. You're making all your money now.
Right.
So they don't like that. And then the other thing was he made a pledge that he was not going to cut Medicaid or Medicare. And then he voted for the big, beautiful bill or the big, bad bill, and which is going to result in cuts
right.
for healthcare.
Right.
So he's on the constant defense, and his record is tarnished. And the
interesting thing is that when Paige Cognetti announced that she was going to run for the seat, he attacked her. His campaign attacked her, not for anything she stood for, but for things that she never made any comment about, such as defunding the police.
Well, that's to change the subject.
Yeah.
And it's to scare people. That's what the Republicans do. They have campaigns based on fear, based on divisiveness. And that's Trumpism in a nutshell, so to speak.
But the truth is that with that kind of an immediate response, if they keep that up and she has adequate financing and an adequate organization, that's, on his part, is a losing campaign. And on her part, gives her a leg up.
She's the candidate of change.
She's the candidate of change and the candidate of truth. After all, she came to power by fighting corruption, and she fought corruption.
Yeah. It's fresh air. She's the fresh air candidate.
Yeah, and Bresnahan did something else. He bought himself a helicopter, which he didn't bother to report on his financial statement, which helicopters cost more than convertibles, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's fairly minor, but it's still something, like you said. It's that he didn't adhere to the requirements of law in terms of reporting. And it's something, Matt Cartwright was attacked. Matt became a pilot while he was in Congress. He studied, he took flight lessons. And one of the reasons he did that is so he could travel back and forth to Washington, D.C., the prime reason, a lot easier than what was that, the ways he had to do it. He'd have to take the train to Philly and then drive up. So he would have a less than an hour flight as opposed to a 3 or 4 hour trip. And he bought a plane and he was attacked for that. Well, helicopters fly too,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's what's happening right now, and we'll see how it plays out. And a lot.
But it's really significant because with all of the talk about gerrymandering, Trump getting Texas to get him 4 or 5 extra seats by gerrymandering, California then moving to counter that, then the Republicans in other states looking to see what they could do to gerrymander to turn the Republican advantage in Congress, to solidify it, to lock it in, to make sure that no Democratic processes could possibly dislodge them from the majority. If you have a chance here in Northeast Pennsylvania of helping to reverse that gerrymandering tide by electing a Democratic congressperson in place of this corrupt Republican, that's strategically very important.
Yeah, well, there were three congressional seats that were won by Republicans because of the tide. The 8th District, Bresnahan's, the Lehigh Valley District, which was even closer, and then Scott Perry's district down around Lancaster area or Lebanon area, Pennsylvania, that the Democrats think they can flip. So we'll have to see. But you talk about gerrymandering. Let me throw this in. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court races that are up, the retention races, the current justices that are up for retention did away with gerrymandering in Pennsylvania. They created a map that made sense, that was compact, that provided for everybody to have a fair shot at in their districts, instead of having these wildly crazy patterns. And they're going to be, the Republicans didn't like that, and they're not going to like it because they're afraid that they're going to do that with the state legislature as well. When that comes up. So they're doing everything to try to get rid of these three justices. This week, I was made privy to an ad that's out there. Very interestingly about the ad, the Vote No, it's a No in November campaign.
That's the Republican campaign, Vote No.
It's a Republican campaign, but the interesting part is what they're pushing. They're pushing absentee and write-in votes. They want the Republicans to vote no by mail-in, right?
Mail-in.
That's what they're pushing, while Donald Trump is attacking mail-in ballots again, because Vladimir Putin attacked mail-in ballots.
He says they should be outlawed.
Yeah, they should be outlawed. So it made a difference in 2020 when he attacked them, so we'll see what happens.
If the new Democratic committee has any brains, they should really seize on that.
Yeah.
And we do have a new Democratic leader for the state committee.
Yes, we do. Gene DePasquale, and we'll have to see. Former Auditor General, unsuccessful congressional candidate. He ran against Scott Perry once, and then he ran for Attorney General last time, and probably shouldn't have run for Attorney General because he's really had no prosecutorial experience, but hopefully he'll do better than Sharif Street in invigorating the party outside of Philadelphia.
I don't see how he could do worse.
Yeah.
Well, that gets, we're talking about the congressional elections. Congress has come into session again. The recess is over. They've got 2 weeks to refund the government, or the government shuts down. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and they're going to need probably Democratic votes.
Why will they need Democratic votes?
Because there's a handful of Republicans that don't want to keep this spending up, although they did cave in on the big, bad, beautiful bill. The Chip Roys, the Thomas Masseys, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, that coalition. So they needed a handful.
The Freedom Caucus.
The Freedom Caucus, basically. And they need a handful of Democrats. And the last time when the Democrats agreed to go along, because they said it's better to fund the government than not to fund the government, they were criticized with the party. Chuck Schumer took a big hit for agreeing to things, because the bill is going to need, particularly in the Senate, it's going to need 60 votes, not 50. It's not under the simple majority rule. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see. That's kind of gotten buried by the Epstein case, which is why they recessed the House a month ago to try to cool down the ardor in that. It just reappeared this week. The Democrats engineered a massive press conference, a large press conference on Capitol Hill. And lo and behold, you had a coalition of Ro Khanna and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massey on the same side.
Some group.
I guess hell froze over for a few hours there. So that's not going away. That's not going away.
So that, it turns out that the Epstein situation is more political and more politically divisive for the Republicans than you would have imagined.
Yeah.
We talked about this a couple of months ago. And, right. It seemed that a couple of months ago, this was a preposterous issue and it wouldn't have any legs. But instead, it's tearing apart the MAGA coalition.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. There was a leaked video of some Republicans saying, we'll release the files, but we're going to redact the names of every Republican in the file and only have the Democrat names out there.
That won't However, work. That won't help them.
Well, one reason it's not going to work, and I thought this was the most important thing that came out of the press conference, the women said, this is not a hoax, and we know who was involved. We know who assaulted us, and we're compiling a list. It's sort of Christmas is coming.
You're not dealing with two women. You're dealing with hundreds of women.
Yeah. There were dozens at that protest, but it's sort of like the old Christmas song, making a list and checking it twice. We're going to find out who's naughty and nice. Yeah. You're going to have a list of who's naughty. And that should strike fear in the hearts of a lot of people.
Well, I think that it's good that this continues. I think that the constant drip, 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 drip of this thing undermines MAGA, keeps them fighting about this thing, and that's all to the good of the American people. Because if they can't get their act together to screw everything up, if they're busy fighting about this, if they're busy possibly splitting about this, that can't help but help.
Yeah, but there's two things that aren't good for the American people that are happening, and you don't want them to be overlooked in the news. One is the situation with jobs and the fact that we're not creating jobs. We're actually losing manufacturing jobs, despite what Donald Trump says about the tariffs and what they're going to do. And if you notice, they're retreating on that. They're saying, well, this is only temporary. It's sort of like what the Biden administration tried to do about inflation. It's only temporary. But they're talking temporary lasting into next year.
After the election.
Yeah, they're hoping. But people are going to get laid off in that temporary position, or that temporary period.
Let me ask you this. Isn't everything temporary?
Well, yeah, we're all temporary.
We're all temporary.
Yeah, of course. We don't want it to be said like Joni Ernst, we're all going to die.
Right, exactly. But who, by the way, she died as a result of that comment. She had to withdraw from Congress.
Yeah, her campaign died.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, to talk about people dying, is this anti-vaccine movement, this populist movement that RFK has been leading, and he's got a major ally down in Florida with Governor DeSantis and the Surgeon General down there, who is an anti-vaxxer, who's come out and said, we are not going to require any vaccines to go to school. Kennedy is coming out and, he's attacking the mRNA vaccines, which were so instrumental, taking away the research. They were so instrumental in halting the losses from COVID. There was a part of his hearing where one of the doctors on the panel, I think it was the senator from Wyoming, who entrapped him. He said, "Don't you think that Donald Trump should get a Nobel Prize for his role in promoting the vaccine?" The COVID vaccine. And what else could Bobby Kennedy Jr. do but say yes? And he said, well, then what, you say that it killed over 1 million people. Why should he get a Nobel Prize for killing over 1 million people?
Right.
Nobel Peace Prize.
Did he answer that?
He deflected. He doesn't have an answer to that.
Well, there is no answer, of course.
There is no answer to that. Yeah, it's like,
There was another very interesting go around at that hearing, which was especially pertinent to rural counties, my county, because Kennedy said one of the great benefits of the great big beautiful bill is it'll be the greatest infusion of money into rural health care in the history of the country, $50 billion. And Bernie Sanders, who is the lead anti-Republican on the committee and chairs the committee when the Democrats have the majority, said, wait a minute, don't be so cute. You cut $150 billion from rural health care and you're putting back $50 billion. By anybody's arithmetic, that means you haven't funded the rural health care by $50 billion. You've cut it by $100 billion. And of course, what could he say about that?
Right.
But if you don't study arithmetic, you may think that he's right.
Yeah, that's the excuse that they gave certain people in Congress to vote for the bill, you know, and I think Bresnahan bought that. Well, we put a $50 billion into rural health care because there is rural areas in his district, Pike County, Wayne County, parts of Monroe and Luzerne County.
The fact is that with this bill, with the way they're doing it, obstetrics care for my district, Muser's district, means that there will not be a single hospital north of Allentown that a woman who's pregnant can go for care or to give birth. And that's a long distance. So, that's typical of the rural areas. That's exactly what this means.
Yeah. Yeah. So, your area, they got to go up to New York State.
But that's not the point, is it?
I know.
Aren't you supposed to get it in Pennsylvania?
Yeah,
in fact, if you have certain types of insurance, you can't do it in New York State. They won't take the insurance.
Right, right.
Well.
That's the other the conundrum.
So let me ask you this. Yes or no? Does it make a difference if Congress funds the government?
Yeah, it does make a difference. It does make a difference because there's other things that just have to go on and have, you know.
But if the Republicans decide, if the administration says, we're not going to spend the money that's allocated, we don't care what it is. We don't care what you say. We're not going to do it. And Trump this week said he was going to do pocket rescissions, meaning he just won't spend the money. And then the fiscal year ends and then the appropriation dies. So, you know.
But they want to spend it on, the administration wants to spend it on what they want to spend it on. They want to spend it on ICE. They want to spend it on things that subsidize their billionaires and what
they
have
may
you.
Be quite happy at this moment. They got $50 billion for ICE.
That's
good for a couple of years.
But if they don't have a budget, there's zero money there. And they can't, you know, it's one thing to say there's X amount of dollars that the Congress appropriated and we're not going to spend it the way Congress wants. We're going to spend it the way we want. That's one thing. But if there's $0 there, they can't spend $0.
All right. So how is that bad?
Well,
I don't see that anything they want to spend it on is any good.
Well, look, there's certain things that have to be that we do need. You need law enforcement. You need some of the military. You know, let's not spend the money on renaming the Defense Department, Department of War. But you still, those people are out there. They need to be paid. You know, the courts need to run. The courts need to run. There's all sorts of projects that are out there that the government.
I understand that. I understand what you're saying. But let's talk about the politics of it. Not now, because we're out of time right now.
Right. Right.
And by the end of next week, when we meet again, this will become even more critical. Maybe we should concentrate on this question next week.
We'll see. Who knows what's going to come up?
Who knows what they'll do, right? Well, any case, we'll come up. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.